Hey guys, welcome to the show. This is John Shea, and today on the show I've got Benji Walclet. He actually was someone I found over on a blog called Niche Pursuits. He had a success story posted about how he was doing really well with niche sites, and I thought I'd reach out to him. And today we're going to talk a little bit about his niche site and how he's had some success with that. Welcome to the show, Benji.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So I guess if you kind of want to, maybe share what got you started with online marketing, just general internet marketing.
All right. Well, I don't know how far back you want me to go, but I kind of fell into it after college, basically. Interned with a digital marketing agency, so that's where I learned kind of about Google AdWords and PPC, SEM, CPC, and all those other acronyms that I had no idea what they meant at the time. But when I left that internship, I kind of just started doing it as a freelancer. I didn't expect to continue doing it, but I know my mom, she said she needed help with her, she needed a website and she needed more clients. So created one, did AdWords, and so the rest was history. It just kind of worked off of that. And then as far as niche sites go and just internet marketing in general, started making websites on WordPress a few years ago, got into Thesis, and eventually discovered Pat Flynn, who inspired me to do my first niche site. Followed his series. I know it was 2 years after, I think in 2012, that I started my niche site. So some of the information was dated, but it at least got me started and taken action. And so I created one niche site early 2012, and it's going strong, continuing to grow. Haven't added much to it lately, but it was really a great learning experience. And now I'm starting on my second one right now. So
Cool. So you've basically just done the one niche site, then you haven't kind of branched out and done multiple sites like some people will do.
I started a few other ones around the same time, actually. I picked some bad keywords and I started to put up sites. And it turns out I really wasn't passionate about the keyword, or it turns out, like I said before, that it was just a low volume keyword. Like I search for the broad match instead of the exact match,
Right.
these common mistakes. And so I ditched, I think, like two other niche sites that I started around the same time and just focused on this one. And now that I just passed the first anniversary of my first niche site, I started working on another one, and now I'm kind of documenting the whole process on my website.
Cool.
So this one's been a little bit slower so far, but I'm just trying to focus on, putting out a quality site. I got other things going on too, so I can't spend as much time as I did on the first one, but
Right.
it's good.
So I know, I mean, you've obviously made your original site that's public, people in your success story, you actually share the URL
Yeah, we'll see
for,
how that goes.
yeah. So, I mean, do you want to, I know we talked a little bit before, you wanted to maybe do like a screen share and we can actually show the audience like what it is that you've been doing and how you kind of built out the site. I really like the theme. I noticed that you actually are using like a thesis skin on top of the base thesis.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share. I guess I'll just do that right now.
Yeah, so for anyone that's happens to be listening on the podcast, you're just gonna have to come to my blog and watch this live because we're gonna do a screen share and he's actually gonna show what he's done with his niche site and maybe talk about some of the plugins and things and content that he's got.
All right, so can you see it?
Yep, yeah, we're good.
All right, awesome. So yeah, it's toprated coffeemakers.com. Some people who followed the success story on Spencer's blog may have read that I actually hired a keyword researcher on Odesk. I was using Market Samurai like Pat recommended at the time, and I was super frustrated with it. I felt like I was constantly waiting for all the data to load up, and I just couldn't find a keyword that would suffice. So I hired a guy on Odesk, and he gave me, I basically told him like about, I think, a few topics I was interested in. He came back with like 10 different keywords. And so I chose one. And top-rated coffee makers was what it was. I didn't initially have this exact match domain here.
Yep.
Originally, I had etoprateredcoffeemakers.com, which was just a hideous domain, obviously. But like a month after I started, I saw that toprateredcoffeemakers.com was available for auction. So I won it, and I think I only paid $30. There was only one other person that bid, so that was pretty awesome. And the downside of having an exact match domain like this, or at least a domain that was previously owned by somebody else, first off, the EMD update kind of messed things up as far as giving extra value to websites with exact match domains. So I think my rankings have probably dropped since that update. And then another thing is there were some, and I actually got this question recently from one of the readers about my backlink profile. There were some spammy backlinks from the previous domain owner, and that I'm not sure if it had a negative effect on, you know, my ultimate rankings, but it wasn't something that I wanted, and it just, you know, I tried the disavow tool. I don't know if that even registered, but
right.
So that was one of the downsides, I'd say. If it had quality links going to it, then that would be awesome. And maybe that has something to do with expired domains, which I know nothing about, and we were talking about earlier. But but basically, I just focused on, you know, making the site as pretty as I can. And yeah, you mentioned it's on Thesis, which is what I use for all of my sites. And it's got a steep learning curve, as some people might know, but it's really robust. You can do a lot of stuff with it. And the skin is called Marketer's Delight, and it's done by this guy named Alex Mangini at colacube.com. So yeah, he's got awesome skins, and I'm pretty much addicted to them. He's a great designer and really young guy, actually several years younger than me, so I'm impressed with his stuff. Then something some other readers might have noticed, you know, I've got responsive AdSense ads and a responsive comparison chart. And so, you know, it just all goes back to user experience. I wanted to just make the site great across all devices, and just, you know, continue to improve the user experience all over time. You know, it wasn't like that always. And I wish I could show you how it looks on my mobile device right now, but you'll have to check it out for yourself if you're curious. So, yeah, that's in a nutshell.
I like that you have, I know we talked about it a little bit, but you have there's a table that you've got right on the main page, and I've used a free plugin called TablePress, but the table that you've got, it's actually like, it's highlighting everything, and it just looks very crisp. It looks really clean.
Yeah, it's a plugin I found a few months ago. I think when I initially tried to find a plugin like this with responsive comparison chart, it didn't exist. It was over on Code Canyon, this plugin, and I was super stoked to find it because this other plugin I have on the site that is kind of it's a review plugin that has since been disbanded by the developers. They disappeared off the face of the planet, but it came with this add-on plugin where you could do comparison charts, but the only problem with it was that it had fixed widths, so I couldn't, anytime I put a table on a page, it would break the responsiveness of my site, make things look really ugly. So I had to either choose to ditch the comparison charts altogether, which would be a bad move, I think, revenue-wise, or just keep them and sacrifice the user experience. And that's also something I didn't want to do. So put me in a tough spot. But yeah, this is called, I think it's called Go Pricing Comparison Charts. Let's see if I can find everybody to check it out if they want. Wow, that didn't do it. I'll look it up in the short show notes or something.
Yeah, exactly. You can leave me a link and we'll just leave it in the show notes. I know I actually spent a little time looking for a table, and I knew there were some that were like paid, and then I asked in a group and someone was like, oh, just use TablePress. And I know
that's what Spencer uses, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's using on his niche site as well. And it looks pretty good if you put in the images and everything. Mine's not too bad.
If you don't have a responsive site, then I think there's no point making a responsive table. And I think also if you're bootstrapping, you might as well just start with a simple free plugin like that one that looks good enough and it gets the job done. You know, Spencer is getting tons of clicks on that table. It's worked great for him. And, you know, I didn't actually implement a table onto my homepage until I was seeing how much success he was having with his own. So. This is a cool plugin because it comes with a lot of themes, and this is just one of them. So you can kind of work off of existing templates and customize how you want. So it requires a little bit of CSS knowledge, I think, sometimes, but most people should be good with it.
Yeah, it looks pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. So now, in terms of some of the content that you've created, are you writing like reviews for each of the products and then doing a product description? Like, what are you doing to kind of gain the traffic and build sort of the, you know, beyond actually targeting just top rated coffee makers as a keyword? Are you getting a lot of long tail traffic from other keywords?
Absolutely. You know, I don't even think I'm getting many visitors. Do you want me to continue to share the screen? And
yeah, why not? I mean, if you got other things to show, I figured it's cool for anyone.
Sure. Like I was saying, I don't think I'm really ranking for the initial keywords I was going after, to be honest. Lots of long tail keywords for specific. So for this one, for example, if somebody searched for the Bonavita BV1800 review, I might be showing up there. I actually haven't checked, but the more stuff you write about specific coffee makers or, I've done some other posts like on, making coffee with a French press, blind taste tests, comparing different coffee makers. So I've had fun with it, but definitely lots of long tail traffic. I'm actually ranking for two keywords now that I never expected to rank for, or never had planned to rank for. I just kind of, based on reading reviews, from people on Amazon, I was seeing lots of people were looking for BPA free coffee makers. Lots of people were looking for USA made coffee makers. So, lots of reviews around the web for this stuff don't really address those things. So I was like, well, I'll go the extra mile and include all that information. So it was really about putting as much information as I could in each of the reviews. Going the extra mile, if you analyze your competitors when you're first getting into a niche, you should look not only at what information they have, but also what you could add to make your reviews unique. So I eventually came up with, I think, like about 10 different rating categories and just wanted to break them down one by one. And just kind of kept reworking it. I probably started with one kind of template for a review where maybe I only looked at, ease of use, durability, and the price. But then I, continued to add more and more information as time went on and supplemented videos and just, tried to add as much content as I could. So it's been a good format, I think. I've done some heat mapping, and people don't tend to go too far down the reviews. They get over it after a while, I think, probably up to the end of the pros and cons. But it's just I think it's nice to provide that extra information. These two videos at the top I did myself. So I did an unboxing and just a video review. So some of these coffee makers I do own. The majority I don't own. I wish I could just review each of them personally, but really make much sense
to own. Like,
I would probably go broke.
Makers.
Yeah, and it would take up a lot of space in my very small kitchen too. So,
have you considered you know, just something that came up, just the thought of this on topic. Have you considered ever reaching out to like any of the manufacturers and saying like, you know, I've got this website and I could review your product and really make it stand out and get you guys more sales? Like, have you ever considered something like that?
Yeah, I have thought of it. I think I ultimately had too much pride and said, you know, they could come to me first. Maybe it will get to that point someday. But the other issue with that is that if I did reach out to some of these manufacturers who already had, my issue is that I didn't want to just reach out to any manufacturer who had a coffee maker that they were looking reviewed. I wanted to find the best coffee makers on Amazon based on reviews and only review those ones. But I suppose what I could have done is, contact somebody like Bonavita and be like, hey, I review these coffee makers and this one sells really well on my website. I think it would be great if I could add a personal review, so maybe you'd be willing to send me one. You know, I don't know how it would go. I suppose it doesn't hurt to try. I have had some actually, I had Bonavita contact me. I did a review on a kettle. I mentioned something about how there was rust, like on the lid, after a few months.
Yep.
So one of their staff members contacted me. She said, there's not supposed to be rust. You know, it's stainless steel. Just fill out this form and we'll send you a new one. And she's like, thanks for your great review, by the way. So, you know, I think that's definitely a great idea, John, and maybe something I'll consider in the future. I haven't been working on the site as much as I'd like to lately. I've been outsourcing a lot of the content creation, but which is a shame, but I'm working on a new site now and a whole bunch of other things. So,
what are you particularly using to outsource the article writing? Are there any particular websites that you're using for that?
Yeah. So originally it was elance.com. Found a few great writers, but I finally tried out TextBroker because I saw Spencer was using it and Spencer Hawes at Niche Pursuits, and I gave it a try and fell in love with it. It's, you know, people deliver the content really quickly and it's generally pretty good. You have lots of control over things like the keyword density and the delivery date, and it's just been a faster way of doing things for me. So I've been using that lately, textbroker.com.
Cool. Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I know I recently went through, it was a pretty brief Amazon course, and the person who outsources in that particular course likes to use a website called iWriter.com.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've heard of that too. I know the guys at Empire Flippers, they use that one. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so if you have any other specific questions about, you know, the website, I can share my screen again and happy to share. But
yeah, no, I think that's pretty good. I like that you've got that plugin that really stands out. And then, so obviously, too, the other thing I noticed is you do have AdSense. Do you notice that you're getting, like, some good click-through on that as well as I would think the Amazon is really where the money is coming from.
Majority. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say Amazon probably makes up twice as much revenue on a monthly basis, and actually I think even more than that now than AdSense does. AdSense has been pretty consistent, like a little more than, it's around like 100 to 150 a month. Wow. So nothing amazing, but I think it's pretty consistent with my traffic. You know, I don't think I get overwhelming traffic numbers, especially nowadays. I would have to look at my analytics to tell you exactly what it is, but good click-through rates. I think the responsive ads have really helped in that regard, and I've done a lot of informal testing, if you will, where I just I see which units perform the best over time as far as click-through rate, and then put those in more places where it works. So,
cool.
Yeah, leaderboards have been great for me, as well as you might have noticed. I can share my screen again, but in each of the individual reviews, there's like an AdSense ad right next to the product image, and yep, those do really well too. So
yeah, I noticed that. that seemed like a really good location for it.
Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't even able to make those images of the products clickable. So if they can't click that, maybe they just, you know, try and click on the AdSense ad next to it to get somewhere.
Right, right. Do you find that, like, you know, now that you've kind of like niched down with that site, I know, like, obviously you have no control of what's going to appear in those ads. Do you notice if it actually does anything really relevant around, like, those products, like the coffee makers?
Yeah, it's a great question. A while back, I added some code that was supposed to make the ads more relevant. Mm-hmm. I can't remember where I put it or what it was, but I think, you know, I've done some stuff. Obviously, I do a lot of stuff on the AdWords end of things. So when I'm finding placements for AdWords ads, you know, you find websites like this. So I have seen relevant ads next to actually some competitors. Actually, Amazon had ads on my site, so I blocked them off because, you know, if somebody's going through an AdSense ad to Amazon, I'm not going to get the commission. I'll get the click commission from AdSense, but it won't be as much as I would if I actually got the referral from Amazon Associates.
Right.
I've also seen another website that sells that Bonavita coffee maker advertising right there next to right there in the article. So I had to block them out because, you know, basically if somebody goes there and buys the coffee maker through their site instead of Amazon, it doesn't help me that much. They get all the credit for my review. So I'm not trying to be like some jerk that is just,
yeah, I mean, it really would make sense. You know, it doesn't make sense for you to give them the sale and you make, you know, a couple dollars off a click versus making, you know, maybe what would you make on the average coffee maker? They go from what I would think 50 up to hundreds of dollars for some of those.
Yeah. Well, since the commission rates are really low on Amazon, for like $150 coffee maker, you make about $9, depending on what tier you're at. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely $9 is more than $1. So,
right.
You know, it is a business in a lot of ways, and you know, I had some videos that other people put on YouTube reviewing the coffee makers, and they came to me and they're like, hey, that's not really fair that you're using our videos and then driving traffic to Amazon. And I said, you know, you're absolutely right. I'll take those down. So, you know, there's a lot of ethical questions when doing stuff like this. I know a lot of people were curious how I could write a review about a coffee maker without actually owning it. And my response to that was, you know, I tried to put as many disclosures as I could and highlight the benefits of basically collating reviews from across the web and saying, well, look, all these user opinions, so people that actually do have it, in as a sum, they're more important than what I, you know, feel.
Right.
You know, as far as an individual review versus a whole bunch of reviews. So, you know, I was basically just a middleman to kind of sum that all up. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of ethical questions that you have to dance with, but tried to make it as trustworthy of a site as I could. And I think since people are buying, I haven't really gotten much negative feedback at all. So just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, now what are you – I know you said you didn't know the exact stats now, but what are you averaging, like, for traffic last you check? Like, say, on a daily basis, how many hits would that website get?
Yeah, I'll check right now. I think it's about, at the moment, 100 to 150. It definitely got inflated a little bit once I had that article on Niche Pursuits. But that's obviously died down because that was weeks ago.
Right.
But yeah, it's about 100 to 150 a day. So, you know, not anything overwhelming, but again, I said, last time I checked, I was ranking number 9 for top rated coffee makers. Before I was also ranking for best rated coffee makers, highest rated coffee makers. I'm like on the second page there now. So, I'm slipping, and I think it has a lot to do with not adding fresh content, not putting up reviews as frequently as I used to. Right. I'll probably have like one a month now. So that's definitely, I think, had an effect. But at the same time, traffic's picked up for those other long tail keywords that we talked about. So as long as the revenue is still going up, then I think that's a sign that the site is still doing well. Also, traffic is consistently going up, I'd say. Not
right, and obviously I'm thinking because all the content you have, if you're getting it all from majority of the search engines, it's all going to be very relevant for what people are looking for, and they're going to find exactly the type of stuff they're looking, the reviews and figuring out exactly what they're trying to find.
Yeah, I've noticed some good engagement too. Just looking at this month, average visit duration was 320, 59% bounce rate, which isn't great, but some of this stuff could be skewed a bit because I'm just looking at my referral traffic. I think, so Niche Pursuit sent 259 visitors this month. Wow. And the bounce rate is 50%, but the average visit duration is 809. So people are clearly probably engaging more than my actual target market, which are people that are looking for coffee makers. But the biggest indicator is that if people are still buying coffee makers and not just buying random stuff on Amazon, then that's a sign that I'm still getting the right traffic, and that's been happening. So, things are looking good.
Do you find that I've heard a couple people talk about this, and I don't know how frequently it'll happen, but do you find that people are like clicking through your Amazon links and then purchasing other products on Amazon that you're making commissions for?
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing major lately. I think the best thing that ever happened was somebody bought like an HDTV, and made more than like $20 on that. But there's definitely a lot of random stuff, and it's kind of fun to see sometimes what people will buy in addition to a coffee maker or instead of a coffee maker. Right. I know Spencer the other day posted something like a 2,500% commission. Did you see that on like a cell phone? It was like a 1 cent cell phone. So he got $25 for it, but definitely a lot of random stuff.
Yeah. I mean, well, of course Amazon is like I found like a niche the other day I was thinking about diving into, cause I just found something like so random, like a product that I'm like, there's no one really doing anything with this, but there's so many things on there and so much stuff that people can buy. I mean, lately my girlfriend's been ordering so much stuff. She said at work she found the UPS guy and he got upset because of all the boxes he's had to deliver Amazon to our house. Because here every week. She's just constantly ordering stuff off there.
I was a pretty addicted consumer on Amazon before. I'd still say I am. I buy a lot of stuff from there, but it really has everything from A to Z, and I'm a little bit, hesitant to recommend the associates program as like the sole monetization strategy for any aspiring niche site creator. I think they can cut me off any day. I know that people run into policy violations from them, and they've got very obscure rules, unfortunately. I've heard a lot of people talking about my link cloaking, and I've done a lot of research on it, and it seems to be like Amazon says it's okay, but it's not okay. And under this circumstance, if you're like cookie stuffing, just very vague stuff that means nothing to nobody. So I just don't want to be too dependent on one
source of income.
Yeah, and I only have two, and if Amazon gets cut off, the site will be doing significantly worse. But really, you gotta try as many different things as you can, and not be too dependent on one.
Right. Yeah, I mean that makes sense. I know a lot of people just in general talk about having multiple streams of income, and obviously not putting all your eggs in one basket. I've heard stories when Google did their bigger updates, a year or 2 years ago, that's when, some people's businesses just turned upside down like overnight.
Yeah. It's scary. I hope nothing happens with my associate's account. That would suck. But
yeah.
I guess, you know, you can oftentimes get your stuff back online, unless there's some new tax law that cuts off all associates from one state. I know Missouri and Kansas the other day, I think they all got cut off. Yeah, I'm just hoping that day doesn't come.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks like you're doing things in a pretty, you know, it's a very legitimate website. It's not like you're doing anything crazy.
Yeah.
I did want to go back a little bit on that whole cloaking link mention.
Yeah,
actually.
Are you
using PrettyLink, the plugin? Are you using PrettyLink? Is that what you're using, or is there something else?
Yeah, I'm not aware. PrettyLink Pro. And I should say, let me share my screen with you again. So in the research I was doing, I read some article, and we can add in the show notes because I think it's really helpful on this topic. And who knows, Amazon can change their mind the next day, but there was some woman who got banned because she was doing link cloaking with a plugin like PrettyLink. I actually think it was PrettyLink. So you can see that it's okay to say buy on Amazon.com if you have like a cloaked link like this. So it's a branded link that says toprated coffeemakers.com/name of the product. But if you have something like, let me find an example. Let's just go back to this review. So I also do like, so BB1800, for example, that's an affiliate link. And it doesn't say anything specifically about Amazon, so hey, that's a red flag based on their policies. But I think, you know, what I got from this article was that you need to have this disclosure at the bottom on every page of your website just to make it unequivocal that you're sending people to Amazon.com and getting you know, commissions for that stuff. So I think for now, at least, that's the workaround. And like I said, who knows, they could come after me and say that I'm still doing something wrong.
Right.
But yes, I am using PrettyLink. I wouldn't recommend it if you're not into taking risks or just starting out. It would be a real headache for me now at this point to go back and change all my links back to the ones generated by Amazon. So that's why I'm not going to do anything until I get dinged, assuming that I do. So,
now, yeah. I know you're also using, I don't know if you have to share it again to describe, but are you using a plugin for like the products themselves? Like I saw you have the buy on Amazon buttons there. Is that just an image you put into the posts, or are you using some sort of plugin?
So it's called My Review Plugin. I don't recommend it though to anybody because like I mentioned earlier, the developers one day just disappeared off the face of the earth. Nobody has any idea what happened to them. So there's really no support for the plugin anymore. And I think it was at least $100. It was an expensive plugin. It served me well because I could do cool things like have that chart in the top right that showed the top five coffee makers.
Yep.
It was a good way to kind of categorize everything. Like I said before, you could do those charts. The buy on Amazon button was also part of the plugin. I actually customized that a bit. So I took the image from Amazon and just plugged it into the plugin.
Yeah.
So they have their own buttons, but yeah, it is a plugin.
Cool. Yeah, I know that I've seen like a few different ones out there. I think I have one called, I want to say it's WP Zon Builder.
Mm-hmm.
One. I forget the exact, that might be the name of it, but it basically, you can literally like write in their API, just search products and it'll put like a, you can tell the pages or posts to become Amazon product pages and it will insert the entire image with the current price and all the description. The thing I didn't like about it was a lot of the descriptions on products were actually just like big blotches of text.
Yeah.
Even like that's how it is on Amazon, like partial, it would have a description. And then some of the products might have like this detailed, like nicely formatted with photos, but then it kind of like has that blob of text, and it, that's how it was putting it on my site, and it just looks terrible. Like, no one wants to do that.
You know, I haven't found an alternative. I was thinking about switching to a new one ever since this one kind of died. Fortunately, it still works on my website, but I didn't really find an alternative that looked like a good option. I think there's a lot of bad ones out there. So in a way, you might want to just do things manually. I know my new site's a review site, and I'm just kind of manually typing in 4 out of 5 stars, et cetera.
Right. I know that, that's pretty much the easier way to go. You know, I was just taking images and then taking the product descriptions as they were on Amazon. Something else I thought I'd ask, and what you may or may not know much about this, but I've heard that, you know, obviously copying an entire review of someone who left, you know, obviously on Amazon there's reviews from the end users who bought the products. I've heard that it's okay to copy half of a review and then say, like, read more on Amazon. Do you know anything about it?
No, I've never heard that. That's interesting. I wouldn't feel good about doing that. I can imagine that would be a very effective tactic, especially if you were taking the most helpful review on said product and put it on your website. And then, you know, the continue to read link, that's just another way to drive them through your affiliate link. Yeah. So, yeah, that sounds like an interesting tactic and probably an effective one.
I've actually seen a combination of someone said that was okay in a course that I've actually been through regarding Amazon. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I've seen, I didn't listen to someone do this. I just saw them do it because I found their niche site when it was a comparative one to one that I run. And what they actually did is they took the reviews on Amazon and they rewrote them in their own words. And then they put a little disclaimer that just says, edited for conciseness, which is like a vague term of saying, like, you know, I took the content and I just made it sound better, because like some of them, I mean, admittedly, if you read them, the grammar and the way that they word things, like, they're not very, you know, they're just putting it out there and they don't really care. I could have written it way better. Some of them, that's not the case. So it's like pretty hard to like do that. So I was kind of like dabbing into that myself. Like, do I, you know, cause I really, like you said earlier, it's really difficult to review something if you don't own it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I would never recommend plagiarizing anything. You know, it might be a quick way to make a buck, but in the end, I'd always say put stuff in your own words. Forget about spinners. I dabbled with those for a while when it came to backlinking. It's just like you're better off just writing the stuff yourself in your own words. You can use other people's reviews as research and formulate your own opinion about it, and then disclose that, hey, you don't own it. I know lots of people, including Pat, would never write a review or promote a product or service that they hadn't used.
Yep.
And I agree with that to some extent, but I think you can still be helpful if you don't own a product and you're summarizing what the most helpful people said. I don't know if, you know, maybe this is hypocritical of me. I don't know if you necessarily deserve the commission off of that, but you know, I think if you ask most people and at least we're upfront, they, you know, if you save them time, then you're doing them a favor, and you know, that's your service. So in a way, I don't know. Maybe I'm going on a tangent here.
I totally understand. I mean, it's definitely a good topic and a discussion. A lot of people, I'm sure, kind of like wonder, like, how do I handle these things? That's something that I've kind of come across myself. So I've wondered, you know, because I have one niche site and it's sort of a work in progress for me. So I've been like, how do I, you know, I don't own any of these products, but, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm not super passionate about, but it's not like something I feel like I can't write about either, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you can provide the information that people are looking for and do it in your own style and your own words, I think that's fair. I mean, at least in my book, that's fair. Yeah, especially if you're disclosing what you're doing. And in the end, the user, the person that comes to your website, is going to be the one that, gets to decide if they think what you're doing is okay or not. And if they don't, then they don't have to buy. They don't have to, take your advice.
Right. Now, did you, I figure this is like a whole other topic in general, but did you kind of want to talk about like some of the strategies you've used in terms of like backlinking or getting traffic beyond just writing articles and kind of like letting the long tail searches kick in? Like, is there anything else you're doing?
It'll be very quick. As some people who read the article know, unfortunately, but I was initially following the backlinking guide that Pat Flynn put together. And I mentioned this in the Niche Pursuits article. I got frustrated with it. I didn't think it was very white hat. It looked like it was just a quick fix, not a long-term strategy. So I started trying to guest post. I got one post published on a good website in my niche, and that's kind of the strategy I was going to take. It's just, guest posting on popular blogs. And eventually I reached out to another really popular one, and the guy said he was going to, that he'd be interested in my article or whatever. And then he flaked on me and I got frustrated. So I kind of ditched all backlinking efforts. I bought a Fiverr gig once too, and who knows what effect that had. I think I eventually just maybe disavowed all the links that the person created. I did some second tier stuff, the stuff that Pat was outlining. There's the strategy, and I know lots of people would either be encouraged or discouraged by this, but it was just to write. Write about the topic of my website and continue to do that. And eventually stuff started falling into place. So.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And I know, one of the other fellows that I recently had on the show, Ryan McLean, he did a website and he talks about, where he's very limited in time and he really doesn't have a lot of time to do a lot of these strategies or read into this stuff, and gets sort of overwhelming because there's so many things out there. What he mentioned was that he just writes articles and then he sort of like sprinkles long tail keywords throughout the articles, and the time he sees the traffic. And it sounds like that's kind of like what's happening for a lot of your stuff. You're seeing traffic from like those super long tail keywords, coffee maker, XYZ review,
Yeah. And do it in a natural way. You don't have to, be so conscious of getting your keyword in the article X number of times. I'm sure, it definitely helps, but the only other thing I would say is that you want to make sure your on-page optimization is pretty solid. So, as we mentioned, using the keywords within the article, obviously, the title tag is very important still, and the meta description. Those are really the three things that I focused on-page wise. I know meta keywords don't really have much value these days, but you might as well keep that stuff nice and tidy if you can, because it definitely doesn't hurt. And I think I started ranking for these other keywords because my on-page stuff was good.
Now, are you using, I guess totally on topic, are you using the native thesis SEO, built-in SEO piece, or are you using an SEO plugin like the WordPress SEO or all-in-one SEO?
Yeah, I'm using the native thesis one.
Okay.
And that site's 1.8.4 thesis, which is much different from 2.0, as some people like you may know. It comes, one of the big selling points for thesis is their built-in SEO.
Right.
And I think that's maybe one of the reasons why I ended up buying it. But just right from the post, you can add your title tags, meta descriptions, meta keywords, permalinks, all that. So yes, native thesis SEO stuff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's good to know. I know that's something I was kind of like because I've got Thesis running myself, and I was like, all right, you know, I'm used to using the WordPress SEO. That's what I use on all my WordPress blogs.
Yeah, I like that'd be superfluous for me or anybody with Thesis, I feel like. So.
Yeah. I know that it was sort of like I found some threads sort of like debating the topics, and I couldn't really get solid answers whether or not it was, you know, or if they're even like one could be overriding the other, you know. And I know Thesis is one of the bigger, you know, I think, you know, when I really look around, I feel like Thesis and Genesis frameworks are like some of the bigger.
Yeah, that's what I would say too.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody that would try and make an argument about one being better than the other, as far as the native Thesis SEO and like a Yoast plugin, I think it's merely anecdotal. I don't think most people test this stuff and can really provide concrete data as to which is more effective. Maybe they did in the article or in the debate, but I think it's not significant enough to really pull your hair out about.
Yeah, I think it was more for me like just noticing in Thesis, I haven't really played with it enough, but it looked like everything just kind of stays. So like if I put WordPress SEO on, it's not like I could go in somewhere and disable all the native Thesis SEO options. I could be wrong, but I'm still pretty new to Thesis.
Yeah, I mean, I always push as few plugins as you possibly can, you know, because it can get messy on the back end and it slows your site down.
Right.
And then the more plugins you have, the more likely that there's going to be plugin conflicts that will break your site completely. So,
Yeah, no, I've had one plugin in the past actually conflict with another, and it took
a nightmare.
It took like disabling 10 plugins, and I've had one plugin that was like some e-commerce plugin. It like deleted a page when I deleted the plugin, and it's just, it can definitely get pretty confusing once you start, you know. To me, sometimes it's even surprising to see how much of it is actually compatible. Like you can put all these different things in that do all this different stuff, and it somehow still all seems to like work for the most part.
I know. I'm like crossing my fingers every time I update a plugin, theme, whatever. I'm just hoping to God nothing goes wrong.
Yeah, the one that I'm always like, you know, they say, oh, yeah, backup everything, you know, doing the major updates, and I'm usually just like, oh, whatever, and never had a problem, but I should probably be more cautious.
Yeah, I think I've ironically, in a way, got a plugin that backs up for me.
Yep.
Yeah, so it sends me like an email with a backup of my database. it takes up more room in my plugin portfolio, but at least it's backing up my site.
Yeah, no, it's worth it. I mean, you never know, you know.
Yeah.
I work, you know, my full-time job, I've had hospitals like, I think we recently had a hospital call in and they lost like a major server, and it took like weeks to like rebuild this thing to get it back to where it is, you know, like pretty major stuff to have servers go down or have data lost because of the choice of not making a backup. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. It will give you a heart attack. There's nothing worse than losing stuff that you've been working on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think we've covered a lot in this. You know, I think we're going on about 15 minutes now. Did you want to cover anything else in particular, the niche sites, or anything else you maybe wanted to share with the audience?
Not that I could think of off the top of my head. I know I really have to pee.
Yeah, man. If you want to get going, you know, I think this is pretty good. It was really valuable. I liked. I was kind of like wondering myself, you know, I've done a few of these interviews already on niche sites and talked about that as like a focus, but we kind of touched upon like some little things I feel like a lot of people would like to know about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazon stuff. So hopefully that'll be useful for anyone who's watching this.
Yeah, I hope people got some good nuggets.
Yep.
It's fun talking about a variety of things.
Yep. All right. Yeah, man. I mean, hopefully I can have you on the show again in the future, and we'll.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your Friday night to do this.
No, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Yep.
Looking forward to the next time.